The Laughter Permitted podcast is brought to you by Ally. Do it right.
Hello to our dope village. I'm Julie Foudy. She's Lynn Olzawi. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Julie.
Lynn, I am super excited for this week's guest because one, she is a rad human, and two, you know where I'm going with this. She comes from the fine institution of Stanford University.
This podcast has had quite a few cardinal on it.
Yeah, I wonder why. It's such a coincidence.
This is our first Stanford basketball player, though.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. We picked one of the all-time greats.
Yes, we did. So let's get to it. Our guest is WNBA superstar Nneka Egwumike. She attended Stanford University, as I just said, leading the Cardinal to four Final Fours and finishing as the second all-time leading scorer. Nneka was then drafted number one overall in the WNBA in 2012 by the Los Angeles Sparks. She would go on to win a WNBA championship in 2016. That same season, she was named WNBA MVP. And then Nneka was elected president of the WNBA Players Association as well in 2016. And this past year, she was crucial in negotiating a game-changing collective bargaining agreement, which we'll, of course, talk about. She has won the WNBA's Kim Perrott Sportsmanship Award twice. That will make a lot of sense during this episode's game. And she might just be, we might as well say it, Len, the first female president of the United States of America.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here. So get comfortable listening. It's Nneka Egwumike. Hey there, Dope Village. Lynn and I have been involved in women's sports our entire lives. And truly, we've never been more excited for what's to come in this women's sports space. And one big reason, Ally. Ally has made a commitment to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And that means more money going to women's sports and more visibility for what these incredible athletes are accomplishing. Ally is on a mission to change the game for women's sports.
So here at Laughter Permitted, we're going to keep telling the stories of trailblazing women. And every time you listen in, you are part of that change. To learn more about Ally, go to ally.com. Hey there, Dope Village. As y'all know, Ally has backed Laughter Permitted since day one of our podcast as our financial ally. And honestly, Lynn, I might just tattoo Ally on my forehead. And Ally is currently on a mission to change the game for women sports.
And get this, along with being sponsors of the National Women's Soccer League, Atlantic Coast Conference, United States Golf Association, and the Las Vegas Aces, Ally has committed to an equal media investment in women's and men's sports.
And you, my friends, can be part of the change by watching your favorite athletes crush it on TV, by going to women's sporting events in person, by, I don't know, maybe listening to every single episode of this amazing podcast on trailblazing women. Because every time you show up for women's sports, you are helping move the game forward. You can learn more about Ally by visiting ally.com.
Kickback, relax, and unwind. Let's have a good time.
I was thinking we could quickly go around, and I'm stealing this from Brené Brown's podcast where you give two words of how you're doing this morning.
Oh, that's good. That's different. We've never started like that.
Like I said, stealing from Brené Brown, not my original idea. I guess she does that at the beginning of meetings with her team.
Oh, that's cool.
Who wants to start? Nneka, go.
Me? Productive. And I can really only, productive and I guess agenda driven.
That's three words, Nneka.
Hyphenated.
Yeah.
Productive before noon is always a good thing. I'm proud of you.
Yeah. I love waking up early.
What time do you get up?
Depends. It depends on like what kind of workout day I'm having. So today I woke up at 6, but it'd be between 5:30 and 7.
Julie, do you have two words?
It's going to be 3. A little frantic. I'm not going to lie. Kids are back in school, shipping them off, get the hell out. It always creates a little bit of friend. I did get my run in early at 7 with my friend. That's always good.
That's good.
It's like my sanity if I don't get my run in. Lynn, two words.
Ear infection.
Oh. How awesome is that? But you have a cute background.
Yeah, the backdrop works. It balances it out, maybe.
Let's do this.
Let's do it.
Okay. All right, NECA, what we always do when we start the podcast is we have you set the scene. Where you are, what you're doing. Set the scene, sure. NECA.
I am in Houston, Texas, hometown, in my house. And it's post-bubble season in full swing prior to elections. And the work that I've been doing since negotiating the CBA is certainly still at the same level of energy after negotiating a bubble season. So, yeah.
Wow. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And the good news is, you're not off to Russia or Poland or China or anywhere else, right? You're staying in the off season.
Yes, I'm staying. And I would say that based on how this year has gone, it is good news, but I was sad when I was supposed to go to China last year before everything happened. And I was actually looking forward to it.
Really?
I like going overseas.
You
do? Yeah, I like going overseas. I'm like a very independent, I can be by myself. And so like, I thrive naturally when I'm overseas, but right now, no, you're right. It's good news that I'm not there because I don't think I could have made it.
I mean, that's a lot though. You would go from 5 months of your season to 7 mm-hmm. months, right? In Russia, for example.
Let me clarify. You're correct. So I couldn't do that. I couldn't do the 12 months anymore. I had entered the phase in my career where I was doing like half seasons.
Oh, gotcha. Because when I heard you say that and you had 2 weeks off total for the year that you did for many years, I don't know how you sustain that. That's insane.
Yeah. Yeah. We all do it. And then like, depending on where your career is going, you can keep doing it. Some people start doing like half seasons where you go like after the new year up until like the WNBA season. So that's kind of like where I was at. I had started doing that the year before and I was going to do it again, but then 2020. Yeah.
2020 is right.
Right.
I feel like that's like everything. But then 2020 happened.
But then 2020.
Okay. I feel like we must then set the scene as well for the wubble. There was so much discussion about it. I am, and I know Lynn is as well. We are dying to hear what life was like inside the wubble.
It was a bubble or wubble, you know?
Yeah,
like,
maybe we should explain because we have a lot of listeners that aren't hardcore sports people. Why it was called the wubble?
Okay. It was called the wubble because it's the WNBA bubble. And so, we wanted to create, I guess like it kind of manifested because both bubbles were in Florida. And so you had the bubble and the wubble. yeah. And we were in Bradenton, which is like about a 45 minute drive from Tampa at IMG Academy. And that's where we were for three-ish straight months. So yeah.
What was a day in the life in the wubble?
So a typical day, let me take you through like a game day.
Cool.
So yeah. So each day you get your schedule, I would say daily or weekly. So there's no way of having a calendar for the month. And that is because we got tested every single day we're there. So I got tested about 70 times. We got tested every single day we were there. And also based on game scheduling, your team would either practice or shoot around at a different time each game, depending on what time your game was, depending on what time they broadcast your games. And so for the better part of the season, you know, us, Phoenix, Vegas, Seattle, like we normally had the later slots because we're all Pacific time. And so our two games were usually, we usually had the 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock games. So on a typical game day, you know, you wake up, eat breakfast, depending on what your testing time is. Usually on a game day, your testing time is going to be in between shoot around and the game. So get ready, whatever, and you do your thing. For us, there were times when shoot around was optional because you're literally playing every other day. But when shoot around wasn't optional, you can hop on your bike, hop on the tram, or ask for a ride from one of your staff members on the golf cart to go to the practice facility. We lived, and by we, I mean me, Simone, and Candace, we lived walking distance from the practice facility. There were four courts. So at any one time, there's four teams out there, and you're never in the same building as the team you're playing against the next day. So you're probably warming up with a team whose game is like an hour before yours. So you go to shoot around, do all that. If testing is immediately after shoot around, you go to the hotel and get tested, figure out your meal, come back, chill, pregame, nap, all that stuff, get ready for the game. And so everybody's game day is the same. You're either getting picked up at the hotel or at the lodge. And so we were at the lodge. So our bus would always come after. They would scoop everybody else on the west side of campus, come and get us. And the bus takes you outside of campus on like a 25-minute ride to Feld, which was where we played. And so that was an event space that they turned into two courts, six locker rooms. You go there, you play. Most times we were the third game. So we're watching one of the games on the TV in our locker room until that game is over. And before you can go on the court, there's about like a 15 to 20 minutes of like sanitizing the court. So the game is played. You can't really warm up. So we're just warming up in our locker rooms. Once that game is over, if you're the third game, you have to wait another 15 minutes for them to sanitize the court. And then you can go out there and warm up. Then you play. And then of course, usually 10 o'clock game, we would finish by like midnight. So we would have put our orders in before we left that day. And when we got back to the hotel, we scoop all of our food. And if you're at the lodge, if you're at the hotel in the Villas, you get off the bus. If you're at the lodge, you get back off the bus and they drive you back to where you're at. And then you do it all over again.
I would say rinse and repeat.
Rinse and repeat. I was trying to give you guys a good visual. So, yeah.
Wow.
Sounded structured, quite structured.
Oh, yeah. It was incredibly structured. It's funny because like I could tell you how to get to IMG to Feld, like, you know, I could tell you how without even knowing where I was at, because we took the same way there, same way back. And the best part about the ride is that you get to ride over a bridge and there's water. Like you get to ride over a bridge and there's water. And so like that, those were our moments of like outside life.
Oh my God. Water.
There's water.
It's like Groundhog Day, huh?
Right. So yeah.
And I know the WNBA has always been super engaged in social issues and racial issues and talking about them, but it felt like it was at a next level. And I'm interested to know if it's because for the first time you all are in one place, able to congregate, able to learn, discuss all these things, issues that are near and dear to you all. And did that have an impact in the social activism we saw so widely from the WNBA this summer?
You know, I think it would be silly of us to not think that that didn't have an impact. And I personally, as a member of the executive committee and being able to represent these women, I was most excited about that, about having everyone available, you know, about being able to meet and congregate at any one time if necessary, which obviously was the case, have like, I guess, you know, with a week or two left of the season, when we opted out of playing those games. And it wasn't what we expected. You know, we knew going in that we wanted to have a social justice committee and a commitment to amplifying our voices on behalf of the Black and Brown lives of men and women as we fight for social justice. But I don't think we really knew what it would look like, you know? Yeah. And when we got in there, we were happy to be equipped for whatever came. We had ideas about the initiatives we wanted to push, but as you know, so many things started happening.
Right.
You know, we were able to meet with Michelle Obama. We were able to meet with Tamika Palmer, Breonna Taylor's mom.
Wow.
We were able to meet with Reverend Warnock down in Georgia. And then Jacob Blake was shot 7 times in the back. And like that all just kind of, those were all things that basically it showed what we were made of in the moment. You know, we weren't prepared for those moments, but it certainly drew to our identity in the past, as you said, Julie, you know, in terms of us always being members of our communities and also leaders in these types of issues as a league.
Yeah. It almost felt like, and I loved it, but it was a middle finger to the shut up and dribble crowd. Like, yeah, okay. You know what? we're not just gonna talk the talk. We're gonna walk the walk. Like you were, like to your point, you were diving in, you were learning, you were activating on issues that matter to you.
Yeah. And in the same respect too, you know, we always know that our voices are amplified together on this platform because we play basketball. And for anyone to say, just shut up and play basketball, all right, no, that's not gonna happen. But also too, moving forward now, as people have recognized the WNBA in terms of social awareness and leaders of change, okay, we do that, but we also hoop. You know, like there's some awesome basketball that people are seeing, as we saw in the playoffs and even throughout the season, there were some historical performances. And I think that is helping us shape our identity kind of on both ends of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. How hard is it as the president of the Players Association to get everyone on the same page? Because you have international players, you have players of all different races, right? And these things are happening and evolving quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And clearly visceral emotional responses are happening. How hard is it to get everyone on the same page?
I think, you know, in the beginning, it was a challenge because I was navigating my role as the president while also understanding how we can be a union and a group of women who represent the league. And so many other things, but I don't know how we would have fared in the negotiating of a bubble and the execution of a bubble and what we came in there to do without the CBA negotiations right before that. That is a big reason why we were able to kind of be in lockstep this year. And through those negotiations, I have prided myself on being a leader that allows everyone to say something and allows every voice to be heard. And for me, in terms of my leadership style and also how we try to lead as an executive committee, getting everyone, I think, on the same page has more to do with listening than telling people what to do. Because
listening, yeah. That doesn't exist in today's world. How dare you talk such blasphemy?
And that's a leader right there, listening.
Listening has way more to do with, I guess, unity, solidarity, or even just getting everybody, you know, in the same book, let alone the same page, you know? And I think that's what we truly learned this year, especially as we navigated these experiences in the bubble, you know? And
That's fascinating.
It's crazy.
That's fascinating that it was kind of that trial run of the CBA.
That's what it felt like.
Well, and I'm sure so much of that too is people trust you are going to make decisions with their best intentions in mind, right? I think it's much easier to lead when the person who's leading, you're like, she's got my back. And I know
I mean,
that.
I hope.
Yeah, well, they lived through it with you with the CBA stuff. So then it's easier, I think, to galvanize and get them all on the same page.
It is easier. And I think I got to say, too, like with our staff as a union, with Terry and the executive committee that we have, I mean, I consider us like real like rock stars because everyone brings something different. And we all have a piece of the pie that just really, it just works so seamlessly, the group that we have. And I'd have to say that really started too with us getting Terry Jackson as our executive director and her expanding the EC, because it used to be 5, but now it's 7. Mm. And I think players. That really, yeah, players, 7 players, yeah.
Yeah, so you have a wider voice.
Yeah, we do have a wider voice.
Was there a moment throughout the activism within the Wubble where you said to yourself, this is exactly where I'm supposed to be right now?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely when we were entering Feld, the arena space, and we were the second game to be played on that day that we decided not to play, the first day. And DC and Atlanta were, it was like the clock was on and there was 30 minutes left. And they were on the court, just no one was dribbling, nothing. They were just talking about what was more important at the time, of course, and always really. Whether they wanted to play, what it meant to them to play, the impact of Jacob Blake getting shot, and of course the heaviness of everything else, being in a bubble, players having their kids there, you know, coaches also standing with the players about what they wanted to do and how we could use this as a moment to kind of recollect ourselves and reflect on why we really came here. And also standing in solidarity with our brethren on the NBA side who had opted not to play as well. It was one of those moments that you would never expect to be in that situation. Hmm. And so you just know in your head that so many people are going to talk about that day and like have their accounts of it. And it'll really be kind of like a historical remembrance of that season, the year, and where we went from there.
And the image of the entire league then afterwards in a gym together, linking arms.
Yeah.
How powerful was that to be a part of?
So I actually was doing the round table at Feld, and then the players were on campus. So the EC, we were able to get the EC together. We were at Feld with Holly and we had the round table. And then I think that was on Sports Center. And then the players all went to the gym on campus and they got together. And of course they wore all of our shirts through collaboration with Phenomenal Woman. And it was overwhelming, but it allowed us to take that time to really consider like what we came here to do.
Yeah.
And I think it was such an inspiring space to be in. Very heavy, but inspiring space to be in, especially because it wasn't just the players. I mean, it was the coaches, the staff, like everybody. Yeah. So yeah, it was beautiful.
You really learn the meaning of family. It becomes an extended family, doesn't it?
Exactly.
In those moments that are so emotional. Speaking of family, you are the oldest of 4 sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Can we talk about your other 3 sisters? Describe Please. Your sisters to me. You're the oldest of 4. Your other 3 sisters.
Yeah. I'm the oldest of 4. The next oldest is Chinee. And we both play on the LA Sparks, but she just started her new national radio show, Golic and Chiné.
Yes, with us at ESPN.
Very. Is it Chiné and Golic? I think it's Chiné and Golic.
Yeah, it's name first. And Golic.
Yeah, her name is first. So she's breaking barriers in so many ways. And broadcast, that is her calling for sure. And so I learned. Yes,
she's so good.
I learned so much from her. She's such a nut,
I love it.
Chiné is definitely like the nut. And then we have Chiso. Most people know her by Olivia. She just graduated Rice University and is now in Rice Business School.
Played ball there. D1 baller.
Played ball there. Yep, D1 baller. Played ball there. And she is looking to enter a career in public. Is it? I don't want to say public service. Is that what it is? Chiso, is that what it is? Public policy. Sorry, she's right here. Public policy. She's about to enter her PhD program. She's applying to
what?
Yeah, to PhD. Yeah, so she's like doing the whole school thing.
Public policy is like, you know, she wants to be a politician one day. That kind of public policy.
She doesn't want to be a politician, but I think she wants to engage in social public policy.
Yeah, love it.
Basically.
Yes,
yeah,
Olivia.
A consultant. Yeah. And then lastly, we have Erin Ma. Everyone knows her by Erica. She also just graduated Rice University. She's a year younger than Chisom. And if whatever award she could have gotten as a basketball player at Rice, she did. And as a student, she is currently, she got drafted to Minnesota Lynx, but was waived with all of the waived players, you know, this pandemic season. But there's interest in her entering a camp next year. So she's training.
Oh, good.
She's training to possibly get a training camp invite and also to play on the Nigerian national team. All while she is currently starting and continuing her first year of medical school at UT Southwestern in Dallas.
What the hell is in the water at the Gwumike household? I want to drink some of that water.
Good Lord. Yeah.
Bottle it.
That's in a nutshell.
Bottle that water up and sell it is right. God. Shoot. That's I mean, your parents, they've done a terrible job with you for. Peter and Iffy. Talk about your folks. They're amazing too.
Yeah, they're awesome. My dad is I think 20 plus year, he's been owning his own business. He's a technological consulting engineer in Nigeria. Well, his business is in Nigeria, but he splits time between here and Nigeria. Never misses a championship, never misses a game. That's my dad. And then my mom is currently an assistant superintendent. Yeah, I think that's what the title is. In the district that we all went to school in. Oh. And she just, she's now a doctor. She just got her PhD, her doctorate. Yeah, she just got her doctorate. So yeah.
Dang.
Yeah.
That is amazing. there's a point in your college career at the fine institution of Stanford University.
Yes.
That you talk about thinking, oh, I'm going to go on to med school. I'm not going to play professionally. Like you really weren't thinking like, oh, this is a path for me. How is that? With your immensely successful collegiate career, you went to four Final Fours.
Yeah. To be honest, I think that it had a lot more to do with ignorance for me. I didn't know much about the professional avenue for women, especially in basketball. But I grew to know more as I became like a senior. And at that point, I had realized that, you know, there were some real opportunities here. In the same way that basketball brought an opportunity for me to get a scholarship from Stanford, I also saw that there were opportunities for me to be able to play professionally, make great money, and kind of see where life goes from there. But I think that my way
what
of thinking
convinced
then,
you to do it? To make that Chiné did.
Chiné did. Yeah.
How so? What'd you do?
I mean, she literally came to me and it was after I remember it was a particular game my senior year. I had like 40 points against Tennessee at Stanford. And Chiné was like, Sinead was like, you do realize that you're going to get drafted number one. And I was like, what does that mean? She was like, are you kidding me? She was like, I'm not going to let you not enter. She was like, you're already on track to graduate early. So, I mean, let's just see what happened.
Oh, and bless sisters that nudge that point, you like, forward.
Yeah. I was like, okay, sure.
Maybe. And then you go on. I think it turned out pretty well. You get drafted number one. You're rookie of the year, your first year. Fifth year, you're MVP. You also win a title that year. You're now president of the Players Association. I'm thinking it went okay. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm not complaining. I definitely feel very blessed. So that's for sure.
On top of, I didn't even mention NECA, the historic collective bargaining agreement that you helped negotiate in January of 2020. You mentioned it at the top of the podcast, but let's just dive into that a little bit more, because what I find, and Lynn and I have discussed this a lot, what we find fascinating is what it means to women who are often in this position of negotiating, who, mm-hmm. and I know I speak for a lot of women, and I speak for myself, it's a very uncomfortable position to be put in. We don't like to, as women often don't, say how great we are and how we deserve more money and all these things. We don't self-advocate very well. So what did you learn in this process that you could possibly share? And what are you most proud of with this historic collective bargaining agreement?
I want to kind of point to what you just said about how like women have a hard time valuing themselves. That is learned. And I think that's something that's conditioned. I think that's something that we have to get out of.
Yep.
And you're right. It was, not only was it daunting because we were trying to value ourselves in what we considered quite dark territory, but two, for many of us, that was the first time we were, so closely acquainted with negotiating in general when it came to like a collective bargain agreement. You always talk about, as a player, you always hear about, the collective bargain agreement is, it's expiring, we have to renew it, and we have to renegotiate. And then they tell you to hop on all these emails, hop on all these calls, talk to your agents, and you're not really thinking much about it. But this was the first time that I think we had so many people truly engaged, mm-hmm. and especially with how this league has been growing and where we see it evolving and progressing to, it's certainly aligned with us breaking the stigma of asking for your worth and for your value. And so the negotiation process was a huge learning experience, because there were certain processes that we didn't understand you necessarily had to go through to get to, the desired outcome. And through that, we were able to listen to players about what was most important to them and be able to truly, express that in what we wanted and also depict it in the agreement. Granted, you don't get everything, but if you don't ask, the answer is always going to be no. And so that's something that we learned all the way to the very end. I mean, when I tell you like the very end, like literally the day I was going on GMA, the very end.
Oh, really? You already had booked GMA and you were still negotiating?
It was a process. It was like that we were trying to still tighten stuff up towards the very end. And, as a player, you're like, fourth quarter, buzzers off, like everything's over. No, that's not how it was.
It's probably good you had cool. Robin Roberts as your deadline to move it along, right?
Yeah, she helped a lot.
I love what you said, though. If you don't ask, the answer is no.
Yeah, that's just really what it is. And I think something that we learned too is something that that women have to get past is this idea of clawing your way to the top. I think that that's kind of a patriarchal frame of mind that might have worked, obviously, for business in this country as it pertains to white men. So there's a lot of people that are like, oh yeah, he was an asshole, and look at him, he's made of millions. Sometimes you got to tear people down. No, especially for women, it doesn't work because if you have those who are already not given an equal piece of the pie tearing each other's pieces up, then it's like, what does anyone have? You know? Yeah. And I think that as players, linking arms, coming together, those who have higher, bigger platforms or have more privilege, speaking up for those who don't, making space for those who don't necessarily have that platform of privilege, and also understanding that we're like all in this together, and us doing that was able to, we were able to make some things happen.
So, president of Players Association, let's just do this thread real quick. President of, you know, the league one day, possibly. And let's continue the thread, shall we? Why not think bigger with that? President of the United States one day. Come on.
That sounds very stressful.
I thought you were going to say, that sounds really good.
I thought you were going that way too.
I was like, yes, we got her.
You're not the first person who has said that, but you know, I've always learned like you don't close doors. You don't close doors. So.
See? All right. Yeah. I take that as a yes, Julie. Fantastic idea.
We need Shanae to come in right now and say.
Yeah. She'd be like, yep, she's there. No, you have such a sensible, measured way, which is, I think, also beautiful.
Thank you.
Do not shut that door, sister. You okay. Walk right through that.
I mean, I'll leave it open.
Okay. Thank you. You heard it here. I'm going to take credit when you are president. I'll be your chief of staff. Lynn would like to run all your comms.
Perfect. We're set.
You got a whole team. All right. Are you ready, NECA, for some competition? Because I know you've been out of the wobble for a little bit. You might be a little rusty with your competitive edge, but I have brought mine. Are you ready?
I think I'm ready. I'm ready to delve into some competitive, you know, natured things right now. So
did you bring a noisemaker of any sort?
I did. Do you guys want to see it?
Yes, please.
Yes, okay, please.
So I had a fan, a Sparks fan, make this for me when I was first elected as president. And so I'm in my second term now, but I have
it's a gavel.
A gavel with my name on it.
Amazing.
It says, what does it say, president? What does it say?
Yeah.
Oh, WNBA president. Then
this has my name on it.
Oh,
yeah.
Fantastic.
So I was like, this is probably perfect.
You know what? I'm going to say this is the first time we have had a gavel on the show. Right?
I'm glad to be the first.
I think best noisemaker yet.
Yeah. Although mine, because I have a problem with donuts, NECA, as you may or may not know, I have a
problem with donuts.
Oh, shut up. You do? I knew I loved you. Could I
need
love
to go
you
to Donut Friend in LA.
Oh, JD Donut Flannels friend. When you come down here this way, when you're cruising down South Orange County. Donut Friend, I haven't been there. Typically when in like better times, we would be sitting at your kitchen table in Houston with a bunch of donuts and coffee. So
I mean, rain check.
Thank you. Yes.
Pandemic check.
Okay. Lynn.
Becca, here is the deal with the game. Every podcast we play a trivia game in which the guest goes head to head with Julie.
Ooh.
There will be 5 questions.
Okay.
First person to 3 correct answers wins. All of them are multiple choice. If you think you know the answer, you can make a noise at any point in the question.
Okay. All right, cool.
Ooh. I got to make sure my hand's on the
trivia
speaker.
Is not my strength.
Oh, mine either. Good. I'm going to beat you.
I'm going to say this is the most random trivia topic I've done yet.
Oh,
perfect.
The theme is to tree or not to tree.
Yes. Okay.
Uh-oh.
Since you both went to Stanford and you have the most ridiculous mascot, a tree.
Is it though? Is it ridiculous?
It is not a bit ridiculous. I am offended by that.
Everybody say
you...
that. Everybody
a tree is a that. Great mascot.
Yeah. Anyway, it's fine.
Whatever.
Can I say random? Is random fair?
Random works better.
Okay. I shouldn't judge the tree.
Yeah, do not judge the tree.
Okay. So all of these questions are about trees.
Oh, God.
Sweet Jesus, we may not get one. Okay, go.
Okay.
Running out of time.
Number one, how many trees are there in the world? A, 3 billion, B, 3 trillion, or C, 3 quadrillion?
I'm just going to guess. A.
Incorrect.
Oh!
B, whatever it correct. Was. What?
3
correct. 3 trillion trees.
You got to hit that gavel, NECA. I'm going to beat you with my squeak. Okay. I can't even hear that thing.
Number wait, hit, two.
Wait, let me hear the gavel real quick. Okay, good.
Okay. Number two, the Hyperion tree is considered the world's tallest known living tree, measuring 380 feet. Where does it reside? Is it A, California, B, Ireland, or C, Alaska? NECA.
Ireland?
Incorrect.
Wow.
California.
Correct.
Yes, dude. Oh, I told you, God. Season four, I was bringing it this year. Usually okay. I lose every all game, right. NECA. Hey, NECA, if you lose the next one, you're out. You're done. Just saying. I sweep.
It's not happening. We're going to do this.
Okay.
Let's do this.
Okay.
Number three, what is America's national tree? Is it A, the redwood, B, the oak, or C, the buckeye?
Julie. She's gonna...
Redwood.
Incorrect.
Oh, come on! What?
NECA.
Is it the oak tree?
Correct.
Yeah!
She's still alive.
I sense a comeback.
I was surprised you said redwood.
Really? Maybe that's our state tree. Is that the California tree?
The redwoods are like, it's somewhere in California. They have a lot of redwoods in the Stanford area.
Yeah, in Northern Cal, they're everywhere. Okay.
Okay, all right,
the
cool.
Oak, I did not know that. Sorry. I am a patriot still.
Question four. What trees famously bloom in Washington, D.C. in the springtime? Oh, no. A, cherry trees. B, red pines. Or C, sycamores.
I think she's going to get this right.
Cherry! Oh, boom.
Correct.
Yay!
Good game. Good game. I'm not a sore loser. Good game.
Thank you, NECA. Thank you. I am a sore winner, according to Lynn. She says I celebrate way too much. I was like, hell no, I am celebrating. I literally never win. So I'm going to start celebrating. Season four, I'm bringing it. I'm bringing it. Okay.
You have to go on a streak.
I got to put my glasses on for most pressing questions. NECA, favorite nickname? Chef Neck. Erica, I believe, must have given you that. Maybe I saw her on YouTube. I feel like she's going to be a YouTube.
I've had Chef Neck for a while. I have a lot of nicknames, though.
Madam President. I know. Question Queen. I saw. What else am I missing?
That's from Tara. Yeah. I have a lot of nicknames. Neck, Neckinator, Guma, Chef Neck, Madam President, DJ Nasty, Question Queen, High Booty. I have a lot of nicknames. I have a lot of nicknames.
We could do an entire podcast with you explaining how you got each nickname.
Neckinator? What was it?
Yeah.
Oh, so good. Neckinator.
Yeah. What is my favorite one? I'm not gonna lie, Madam President, it makes me laugh every time someone says that, because I'm like, stop.
You should just tell people, like, I will only be addressed from now on henceforth as Madam President.
One of my teammates only calls me that. I'm just like, that's enough.
I'm joining the Madam President bandwagon from now on.
Okay. That's the one I was going to recommend if you didn't get there yourself. I understand you also almost went to med school. I almost went to med school, or at least the medical route. But I have to ask you, how many times, because I must have done this at least 100, how many times in your career as the president of the Players Association did you think, why didn't I just go to law school?
Oh, no.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
Do you know how much money we would have saved?
I know. We would have saved a lot, but like, no, I didn't actually think, I haven't thought that.
Oh, I think that all the time still today.
Really?
Yes. Like, God, law school. Ugh. It's all written in this such, you know, legalese. I'm like, what is this jargon?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Our last segment. With my glasses off, I don't need it. Our last segment we do is called High Low Cheer on the podcast. And this comes from something I steal from our dinner table with my kids. We do their high of the day, low of the day. And the cheer is someone that they're grateful for. So for you, your high, low cheer, high of your career, low of your career. And the cheer is for someone you are grateful for who's helped you along the way.
Okay. High of my career. There's a lot. There's a tie. It's like very close. There's moments that are edging things out, but I'd have to say like 2016. Like, yeah. I mean, that whole year was just fantastic. And that's not just WNBA, because I also won a EuroLeague championship that year too. Yeah. So yeah, it was crazy. Low was probably the year that I missed the All-Star game because I found out halfway through the season that I had played half the season with mono.
Oh my gosh.
That was very difficult. Yeah. And it was low because obviously I felt horrible, but like they didn't actually figure out what was wrong with me until the season was over. So that was tough.
So they misdiagnosed it for half the season?
It's not like they misdiagnosed it, but like, I guess that it had run its course to the point where it was hard for them to figure out what was happening. Cause I think I had caught it in Russia and then I came back and started, you know, like you only have like a week in between. I had started playing. I thought I was just kind of like tired, like from like playing years after year. But yeah, towards the end of the season, they finally figured out, but I missed the All-Star game. It was tough. That was a low. And then in terms of cheer, I probably have to cheer for Chiney. Yeah, definitely cheer for Chiney, because she's the one person in my life that I can talk to about what I'm experiencing, because our careers so closely match, mm-hmm. you know, our personal experiences. Of course, we went different ways, but then also for me to be able to confide in someone who's, you know, in front of the camera, in the media and such, and for me to learn from her too, from what she does, because I could never do what she does. Like, I don't know how she does it. Studies, is always on, giving her best in that regard. So definitely a cheer. And I mean, I'm just very proud of where her career has gone. Like, and it's crazy because it's literally the beginning for her. Yeah, so,
I was just going to say, yeah. It's just started. I mean, the sky is the limit for her. Or as we used to say, why does the sky even have to be the limit?
Exactly.
I love that you were on and surprised her for her first day of her radio show.
She had like, no idea.
Yeah, she got really emotional. I was listening and watching. I was like, oh, this is the best.
She was shocked because I had like called her. I had like called her while she was prepping before she went on. And I was like, oh, dang. Sorry, I was trying to talk to you before your show. And then I pop on, I'm like, and she had no idea. Chiney doesn't like surprises. So yeah, it was great.
So good. So good. All right, my dear. Thank you so much for taking the time, NECA.
Thank you. It was so great speaking
Madam
with
President,
both of you.
2024. Let's see it.
24?
Yeah, why not?
I think that's very doable.
Would they elect a 34-year-old president?
Let's go, NECA. It started here. Woo! We're taking credit. One correction we must make to the 2024 NECA for President campaign.
Yes.
You can't be 34. We discover it after. Lynn, good job on this. Capital J for journalist.
Discovered. I referenced the Google. And you do have to be at least 35 to be president of the United States. So we're going NECA for president 2028.
Yes, we are. Because then she'll be 39. Do the math.
Or 38.
39.
34. Oh, wait. You're right. 38.
This is why calculators exist. Okay.
All right, NECA. 2028, sister. Takeaways. You want me to go?
Go for it.
Oh, gosh. One, just as someone who's lived through a lot of CBA negotiations, a lot of contentious battles, a lot of trying to gather people and get them on the same page, to hear her talk about being able to do that for an entire league. I mean, I did that in a form of a national team. And it's still tough trying to get just a team on the same page, because it does get contentious and it can get ugly and people get scared and, you know, and there's divisions that are created. And so for her to be able to bring that whole league together in the way she has as president, I find remarkable and commendable, because it's not easy. And then for her to bring to the table what she did with Kathy and the WNBA and in this latest round of negotiations and strike one of the most historic CBAs, the most historic CBA for of course the WNBA, I thought was also incredible. So
on that note, my takeaway would be when she talked about her leadership style and the importance of
listening.
Thought that was really a great insight. And then from a personal standpoint, I became an even bigger fan of the WNBA after this summer and seeing what they accomplished in the wobble. On the court, the basketball was phenomenal, but what they did, as you said, coming together as an entire league, and clearly NECA had a big role in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I should have said that, not just with CBA, but all that they've done on the activism side as well. All right. Questions permitted, Lynn. What do we got?
This question comes from Twitter via @CoachLA15. She says, proud and loyal member of the Dope Village.
Yeah.
Who would love
LA15.
Dope Village swag. When can I purchase a sweet t-shirt? We've gotten this question before. I think the answer is we agree with you. We need swag. We haven't quite gotten there yet. And maybe we need to make a push for it.
Oh, @CoachLA15. I wish I had a better answer for you. The answer is that we've hit some bureaucratic red tape and can't really get it done. There you have it.
We're going to work on it.
We are working on it.
We will work
on it.
That's
a better answer, Lynn.
Yeah, I think this question will get us motivated to revisit the topic. It is something we have brought up. So I agree. I would love a t-shirt that just said #DopeVillage on it.
I mean, why do we even go through the proper channels? Why don't we just do it? #DopeVillage. LP, baby. Little LP on the back.
I like it.
And with that, we will close out the show. Be sure to hit us up on social media. Please subscribe, rate, and leave a comment on our Apple Podcast page. If you listen on other platforms, we thank you and ask you to share your favorite episode with at least 10 people. It will bring you good luck. Thank you to our sponsors, Ally Bank and Dick's Sporting Goods, for supporting Laughter Permitted and our Dope Village. Please support both of those sponsors. And a shout out to Kate Diaz, a Julie Foudy Sports Leadership Academy alum, for our theme music. And as always, remember, kids, sing it with us.
Laughter Permitted.
Wake up to the best sports story you'll hear all day. Monday through Friday, host Pablo Torre brings you an inside look at the most interesting story at ESPN as told by the top reporters and insiders. That's ESPN Daily. Subscribe and listen along with Laughter Permitted wherever you get your podcasts.